everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on a snow day. A rare event anytime it ever snows in Tucson. You know, 90% of the snow days, the snow comes at night. But rarely do we see a daytime event like this. And oddly enough, the last time we had a Tucson snow was February 2 years ago. Again, during the day, that was in 2019, and we actually had about 2 to 4 inches of snow. And another odd thing, up in the foothills area, as I was driving in, big white flakes, nothing sticking to the ground. But when I got to the radio station, which is, I don't know, maybe about 500 feet lower in elevation, there was snow on the ground. There's snow, or was, when I arrived here at KVOI on the ground. Not like on the ground like Shelley Fishman, who's with me in studio, remembers during his days in New York City or my days in Chicagoland. But hey, it's snow. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our guests appear on our live line, courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Why don't we go now on the live line to the state capitol, up to Phoenix. State Representative Pam Powers Hanley is with us, Democrat representing Legislative District Number 9. Representative Powers Hanley, how are you?
Good, Bill, and thanks so much for inviting me.
Did you get any snow up in Phoenix?
No, we didn't get snow. We got a lot of rain. It even thundered last night, which was kind of surprising.
Wow, we certainly need the moisture, that's for sure. This move by Republicans to lessen the power of the governor, his emergency powers, do you think that has any legs? Is it going anywhere?
Well, I sure hope not. I mean, I often disagree with Governor Ducey, but I think that his emergency powers have worked well for the state. I think he could have gone a little farther with how he spent the money and, you know, distribution of the vaccine and things like that. But no, I don't agree with the Republicans regarding trying to limit his executive power.
Are they moving forward with that?
There is rumblings, and there are bills. They're not in my committees. I'm on Ways and Means and Commerce this year, and so my bills that I'm hearing are all about money. All about money and taxes.
Well, all about money is important, certainly in this this legislative session, dominated with the news of COVID. First of all, is this session pretty much all virtual? Are you meeting in person?
Well, that's a great question, because it sort of depends on whether you have a D or an R behind your name. The Republicans are primarily still meeting in person. There's many of them who are not wearing masks, even though they're supposed to be wearing masks. And the Democrats, for the most part, are meeting virtually. In fact, just before this phone call, I was on a full virtual caucus with the Democratic caucus. And with the committees, there's 23 committees in the legislature, counting the ones in the Senate and in the House. There's 3 committees that do not allow virtual participation by the public or by the lobbyists, and that's an issue. And so the Democrats have been pushing for the idea that it's safer for the public if they can testify virtually in committee. Because otherwise, you know, their voice is lost. And so it's a hodgepodge, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. There's also restrictions, like if members want to participate in the floor virtually, although they may be up in their offices, they're not allowed to speak. They're only allowed to vote. And that's kind of a hassle because, you know, we learn a lot when people start asking questions and start speaking out on the floor. So I wish it was more consistent, you know, but I think we need virtual because of COVID.
And there's no, you say people are wearing masks when the Republicans are gathering at the legislature, even though you say there's, you know, you're not supposed to do that, but I guess no one's enforcing it. Is that kind of the way it's going?
Right. It's not being enforced in the House. It is being enforced in the Senate, the mask protocol. And so like in the House, it's a little bit looser. People are supposed to complain. Like, for example, in committee, some of the Democrats are calling point of order because there's one or more Republicans with no masks. then the procedure is, this hasn't happened in my committees, but the procedure is that the person goes to the principal's office, goes and meets Speaker Bowers, and comes back with a mask on. So it stops the game, right? You know, you stop the game, you say point of order, somebody has to go get a mask and come back and put it on. So it's kind of ridiculous. I don't know why we just don't enforce it, you know?
What is the number one issue you're dealing with?
Well, the number one issue that I'm dealing with right now is, fiscal conservatism on ways and means and commerce. But I think that we should be focusing on COVID, and the legislature is pretty much not focusing on the pandemic. The Democrats heard polling numbers a few weeks ago that Arizonans' number one concern is survival of the pandemic. They want to live past the COVID, and they want their family members to live. And their second biggest concern is that they want to make sure that they, you know, don't lose their houses and their total financial wherewithal. And so I think that's where the legislature should be focusing, is on helping the people and the local small businesses survive the pandemic, rather than hearing old bills from 2020 that didn't pass.
Well, no one polled me, Representative, but I would tell you, if they had, I would say that's the number one issue for me, is surviving COVID and being a person over 65, just waiting, counting the days until I can get the vaccine. And I think I'm not alone. That polling shows this is the top priority. And why that is not being reflected with the state representatives, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, even in the health committee, you know, they're not hearing these things. And so I really think that, I mean, there was a lot of people who were, you know, some people have done well during the pandemic, and some people have done very poorly. And the people who have done poorly have been doing poorly for a very long time, because we're a somewhat stingy state with unemployment and cash assistance to the poor. And so, the job losses from the pandemic are at the low end of the economy. And so the rich people are doing fine. The middle class people, the office workers who have been working in their pajamas from home and saving money for the last 8 months, they're buying things online. So the state, our economy is actually doing pretty well because of all these online purchases and savings in certain sectors. But then where we're really hurting is, you know, tourism and hotels. And so it's those restaurant workers and the hotel workers and the people who were, you know, living paycheck to paycheck before are the ones who really need our help now. And I see the legislature pretty much ignoring them.
Let's take a quick call. Matt has called us, 790-2040. Matt, you're with State Representative Pam Powers-Hanley.
Yeah, hey, Representative Hanley, two things. One, on vaccines, I think you all need to also be making calls to our two senators, Senator Sinema and Senator Kelly, and finding out if there's a way for the government to send our quantity directly to Pima County, given that we're already, with the CARES Act, we get the money directly for the city and because just waiting for the state AZDH to give us our portion, I don't think is working. And I am concerned that the federal government needs to be pushed also as to get a status as to when we are going to get our next allotment. On the state side, the governor, people are calling, asking me about, the governor's proposed tax cuts, $1.8 billion, and he's going to gut the state budget again. Any thoughts on that? Thank you. Bye.
Two items there, vaccine and then the tax cuts.
Right. Yeah, on the vaccines, I totally agree with them. And this is an across-the-board issue with local areas not getting their vaccine fast enough from the governor, right? And so I totally agree with him on that. I'm somebody who's over 65, and I don't have the vaccine yet also. I mean, I bought a HEPA filter for my office here, and I wear my mask all the time because I still also want to survive. On the tax cuts, that's a really good question, because if you listen to multiple financial review meetings that have been held at the Capitol recently, I mean, JLBC is practically giddy with the amount of sales tax we've raked in. And so that is, of course, you know, sparking some other people to say, let's cut taxes. But again, we have a chronically underfunded programs, including public education, but it goes beyond that to, you know, maternal and child health and things like that. So rather than giving the money away, we should bolster our programs, because right now the state is living off sales tax and living off the largesse from the federal government. And at some point, the federal government is going to stop giving us support. And if we have cut the taxes in between that time, we're going to be really in trouble later. And so we need to invest in our in the people in the state, rather than giving the taxes away. And so, you know, me, I am holding the hard line against those tax giveaways, because I think it's inappropriate to cut taxes for corporations and primarily for Arizona's 1% during a pandemic.
All right, State Representative Pam Powers Hanley. Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Representative Hanley on our live line, courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mona's Danish Bakery. Boy, wouldn't a Mona's, either one of my favorite blueberry muffins, how about a cinnamon roll? What about a Danish Kringle? How about one of their beautiful hot sandwiches? Right now they're open for lunch. Any of that sounds really good on a rainy, kind of snowy day. Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open Monday through Saturday. They open at 6:30 in the morning, and on Sunday at 7 a.m., they are open, and lots of folks love Mona's, not only on the weekends, but during the week. As I say, right now, open for lunch. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Shelley Fishman is coming up next. Shelley with me in studio for our Tuesday Moneymaker Report in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is. We welcome him back to the studio, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how is your snow day going?
Well, it's a winter wonderland out there, Bill.
Yeah, not quite what we're used to. You from New York, myself from Chicagoland. A day like this in Chicago would be considered a mild winter day.
Oh, yeah. this wouldn't even get anybody's attention.
No, it wouldn't. What is getting attention are the day traders. The day traders are kind of moving the needle these days on the street, aren't they?
Yeah, there's been a real change in the past year that has allowed people who like to trade on a daily basis, they're not investors, they're gamblers, so don't try this at home,
mm-hmm.
who will actually watch the markets on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute basis, and then try to arbitrage between a small movement and what they perceive to be the next move. So they're not out to make big killings on a day-to-day basis necessarily. They're out to make a lot of small killings. Now, computers can do this, and computers do it, and they do it much faster than people like you and I could do it if we were sitting, you know, in front of our computers and trying to make determinations of what the next thing to do is. But one of the big changes that's happened in the past year is that some of the largest online brokerage houses have begun to allow free trading for investors. Mm. So if you have an account at one of these broker dealers, you can get online and you can do virtually unlimited trades without paying a commission. Now, we can argue the merits of whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, or whether or not that is going to make these brokerage houses more liable to financial weaknesses going forward. But they've determined that that's one of the things they want to do. But there's been a wrinkle that's been introduced into this, and that is there are several places where you can go online and now you can buy and sell options with either very, very small or no commissions.
And traditionally, options carried quite a heavy premium on the percentage.
Absolutely. Because
the buy-in on them.
Because most options are traded in single digits. There's, you know, $3 for this, or $2 for that, or whatever, the price of the option. Now, the underlying security might be in the hundreds, but the option itself is typically not. And so if you're paying $1 for a $2 option, then essentially your cost is $3. So it had the effect of limiting to an extent the variability of options and how volatile that option trading was. Well, now with the ability to get on there and buy and sell options literally in the moment, it is playing havoc with the companies that would normally trade options in the longer term or cover their investments with short trades and that kind of thing.
So you've got much higher volatility.
And less predictability. Hmm. So that what's happened is what we're seeing is companies that people speculate in more that have shown a lot of movement in the past, say, 6 months, are getting a lot more play than they would normally get, and a lot more shares traded or options bought and sold on those companies. The other thing is, in buying and selling options, most broker-dealers require that you be a qualified trader, that you be qualified in terms of the amount of money you got in the bank and qualified in terms of the number of years you've been doing this. And they won't authorize you to buy or sell the full panoply, the full range of options, until you've been fully qualified. There's one exception to that, and that's something called covered calls, where the maximum you could lose is the movement of the stock in a positive direction. So there's an opportunity cost. You buy a stock, let's say you buy 100 shares of ABC Widget Company at $10, and then you write a call on those 100 shares that says that you'll let somebody buy it back from you for $12. So you get, you're selling that call, which means you're going to get some amount of money for the sale, 50 cents, 80 cents a buck. If the stock goes to $11.50, the call is retired without being acted upon. So now you've taken your $10 stock, and because you've written a call on it that you got a dollar for, that $10 stock now costs you $9. And if the call expires and the stock is at, say, $11.50, you can either sell the stock at that point, having made $2.50 instead of $1.50 on the sale, or you write another call. And so there are people who, it's called a covered call because your call is covered by the shares that you own. Now, an uncovered call is very, very dangerous because if the stock falls to zero, you're about to lose a lot of money. But your real liability in writing a covered call is if the stock were to shoot up to 20 and you get called at 12, you've lost the $8. But that's an opportunity loss, okay? It's not a real loss. So lots of people, even when options were expensive to trade, would write covered calls, and that's because of the minimal risk to the investor. That was permitted by most broker-dealers. But what's happening now are short orders, people buying and selling put options. And again, if you know what you're doing and if you really are good at it, you might be able to make some money. You know, one wrong move and you can get wiped out. So this isn't something, you know, that you do, from the comfort of your couch every occasionally. But it's throwing a lot of volatility into the market in areas of the market that we haven't seen a lot of volatility in before. And right now, you and I have talked about the probability that we're going to see a bubble coming up because of a lot of people who have done okay during the pandemic over the past year, and they haven't had the opportunity to go out to dinner, to go on vacations, etc. So there's pent-up demand and a whole bunch of money in their savings accounts or in their investment accounts that gives them the ability then to start fulfilling that pent-up demand in large items and in service items going forward. That predictable bubble, and we don't know how long it'll last, but that predictable bubble is an area for, you know, very fertile speculation among day traders. And so what can happen is what would ordinarily be a bubble and given normal supply and demand could get exaggerated by the day trading and the option trading. And that, again, could signal some unpredictable movements in the markets going forward. I'd watch it very carefully. If there's any listeners out there who kind of do this, then why are they listening to this show? They ought to be glued to their computers. But yeah, we're going to see some additional volatility, I think, in these markets. The general feeling is that there will be some stimulus, probably not as much as we thought there might be a couple of weeks ago, but that will work well in the economy. And when the economy begins to show some stability, then I think we'll begin to see the kind of movement in the markets that would reflect that stability in the economy.
So, Shelley, I've only got a few seconds, but the big brokerage houses are not charging these day traders. Several of them to get involved. And they must feel that it's worth getting the names of these people and the volume.
Float in the cash that comes in and out of their coffers as these trades are resolved. But more importantly, when you are working with a broker dealer, so you might have one free account, mm-hmm. but you also might put your IRA there.
Sure.
You might put some other investments
there.
The other
there. Products.
And so it's a marketing gimmick to build volume and to build customers. And, you know, some very smart people are promoting it, so apparently it's working.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. Shelley, we will see you next Tuesday
here
with
in the
your
studio.
Report.
I love
there
it.
You go. Thanks, Shelley. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Check out Green Things, now in their 51st year, 13 acres of amazing plants, 3384 East River Road. Before you know it, it'll be time to do some spring planting. And folks, you will be ready if you check out Green Things, because there's a huge variety of plants available. Their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com, for all that great merchandise, much of it hand-carved from Latin America. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is courtesy of Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. 2020 was the 44th annual Southwest Books of the Year competition presented by the Pima County Public Library. The Southwest Books of the Year features titles published in the calendar year 2020 that are about the Southwest. It includes fiction and nonfiction titles, as well as a selection of books for kids. The competition is made possible by a gift from the Friends of the Pima County Public Library and by the Arizona State Library Archives and Public Records. Books selected by two or more of the six reviewers become a top pick, and this year there are 10 top picks. Here's a list of them. Before we talk to two of the reviewers, let's go over the list. A Desert Feast, celebrating Tucson's culinary heritage. We interviewed Carolyn Neatheimer here on the program a couple of weeks ago. That's a University of Arizona Press book. A Good Map of All Things, published by University of Arizona Press. In the Shadows of the Freeway, Growing Up Brown and Queer, that is a Planet Earth Press publication of on Swift Horses, and that one is from Riverhead Books. We'll be talking about that with one of our reviewers. Post-Colonial Love Poem from Gray Wolf Press, another book we'll be talking about with one of our reviewers. Reservation Restless, published by University of New Mexico Press. Separated, Inside an American Tragedy, Two Desperados, Desert Notebook, A Roadmap for the End of Time, and Valentine, a fiction book by Elizabeth Wetmore from HarperCollins. Let's now welcome to the Buckmaster Show two of the six reviewers. Dr. Bruce Dingus, retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society, and Arizona Daily Star literary critic Helene Woodhams, retired from the Pima County Public Library, where she was literary arts librarian and coordinator of Southwest Books of the Year. Welcome to both of you. Let's begin with Dr. Bruce Dingus. Bruce, what can you say generally about this year's crop of books?
There were a lot of them. We had a really wide, diverse selections among the panelists, but we all had our kind of favorites, and we coalesced as usual around the ones that you just listed. And as always, it's been a great year for fiction and nonfiction.
Let's begin. I think we've got five books that we're going to cover here before the end of the hour. Let's begin with Helene, and we will check out your book that you liked very much, A Good Map of All Things. Helene, welcome to the program.
Well, Bill, thank you for having me. A Good Map of All Things was a wonderful book. It's a wonderful book. In a profoundly disturbing year, I think that you would agree, when everything just sort of seemed tinged with despair, this book was a joy to read. It's beautifully written, and it's warmly comforting. The author is Alberto Rios, who's Arizona's first poet laureate, and he knows a thing or two about an elegant turn of phrase. Now, this book is set in a small town in the Pimeria Alta section of northern Mexico, and the townsfolk say, if you look hard, you can see Tucson. It's a tightly knit community, and the book focuses on 20 of the townspeople whose experiences are related in interwoven stories. And this is reflective of the way they kind of glide in and out of each other's orbit, you know, and they impact on each other. And they will probably remind you of people that you know. You know, they're funny and they're idiosyncratic and they're maybe a little bit crazy. And it might have something to do with the times. The book is set about midway through the 20th century. Modern ways are starting to creep into this little town, and it's not altogether comfortably because it's a traditional sort of place. For instance, Narciso, who is the doctor, forms a science society for the discussion of modern things, and the meetings are poorly attended, and everybody leaves early. So life is simple here. There are adventures. There are things to marvel at. People find love, they grieve losses, and they embrace tradition. And it is conveyed with a poetic charm in a book that just envelops you, and you don't want it to end.
Had Rios gotten into fiction, being such a well-known poet? Had he done any fiction before?
He does everything.
Okay.
He does everything. He's done memoir. He's done poetry. I believe he's written for a young audience. He's just a man for all seasons.
There you go. And the name of the book is A Good Map of All Things. That's a UA Press book. Let's move over now to Dr. Dingus, Separated Inside an American Tragedy. Bruce, tell us about this book.
This is by Jacob Soboroff, who many people probably know. He's an NBC and MSNBC correspondent. And he's a reporter, and it's the book at first glance reads like a reporter's book. It's in simple, straightforward kind of prose, and it's kind of deceptive because it takes away from you reading into it, and you suddenly realize how earth-shattering the things he's uncovering are. And what he's doing is taking a deep dive into the origins and misapplications and consequences of what he calls the Trump administration's most spectacular policy fail, namely the forced separation and deportation of immigrant adults and children. And he grounds the story in personal observation, contemporary reporting, and a trove of public documents that not only expose the motives behind this breathtakingly craven policy, but also the staggering ineptitude and the blatant lies of the political appointees responsible for implementing it. And it's a book that just gets to the core of sort of a calculated cruelty that during the latter part of the Trump administration were at the heart of U.S. border policy, things that, you know, he was just kind of the first person to get in there and really recognize what was going on and say, hey, look at this.
And this book makes the Southwest Books of the Year category because of Soboroff's delving into the immigration and border policies, correct, Bruce Dingus?
Right, exactly.
Let's talk about another book. Actually, as I look at the list here, this is the one book that both of you, Bruce and Helene, agreed on. A well-known Tucson author, Susan Lowell. The book is Two Desperados. Let's talk about this book before we take the break. Helene, you begin.
Yeah, this is just an amazing book. I think a lot of people know Susan Lowell primarily as a children's book author of Southwest classics. I mean, think of The Three Little Javelinas, which has really gone down in the annals of terrific Southwest books for kids. But this really intriguing collection of short stories is going to make you think twice about Susan in this way. Susan writes the Southwest like few other people can. She's a fourth-generation Arizonan. So this Arizona, it's a landscape, it's an attitude that she understands and she recognizes. And when it comes to the borderlands, her sense of place is unerring. You know just where you are. But it's really the cast of characters that make these gems sparkle. They're a little bit like Rios. These characters are idiosyncratic. They are very original. The story that lends its title to the collection is about a footloose young woman coming in from Alaska. Her life has gone a little bit off the rails, and she finds herself back in Tucson, and she is awash in ghosts and family secrets and discovers an old-timey sepia-tint photo of a woman holding a dagger to the chest of a lavishly mustachioed man. And these are the two desperados, and she understands they're her ancestors, and they sort of hint at that her way forward might likely be in the past. It's just an amazing way she handles this in this wonderful story. The other very interesting thing I thought is that fans of the late Jim Harrison will enjoy The Woman Who Loved Trees. This is Lowell's contemplation on an aging poet, and he's raging, and he's Jim Harrison. He was exactly how you picture him. And she dedicates the volume to Harrison.
Bruce Dingus, you like this book very much as well.
I echo what Helene said. This was kind of a midsummer Christmas present for me. I went to the mailbox and Susan had sent me a copy of the book. I'm not sure if I would have seen it otherwise. I just immediately sat down and just poured through it. And it reminded me too. They have also reissued. She gave our attention first in 1988 when she won Milkwood Fiction Award for Ganado Red, and that book also has been reissued. So it's kind of a nice bookend now for Susan, and a great reminder of what a terrific storyteller she is.
I think that was the first time I met her. I think that did come out 1988. I think I had just started at Arizona Illustrated on Channel 6 when that book Ganado Red came out. You say it's been reissued.
Yes, it has.
Bruce Dingus, Helene Woodhams with us, two of the six judges in this year's, even though we're in 2021, 2020 was a weird year, so we're just now getting around to the 2020 Southwest Books of the Year. More on that as we continue in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Buckmaster continues right after this. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Such a wonderful destination. We send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, which right now is off limits to out-of-state visitors, but we're keeping our fingers crossed that that will change, hopefully in the coming weeks, so folks will be once again able to take that three-hour drive over to Silver City and recreate in the Gila National Wilderness and so many things to do over there, as nicely outlined on their website, southwestnewmexico.org, places to stay and things to do in Silver City and Grant County. We're talking about the 2020, it's actually the 44th annual Southwest Books of the Year competition. Two of the six reviewers are with us on the live line. We're going over half of the top 10 picks with Dr. Bruce Dingus, retired director of publications for the Arizona Historical Society, and Helene Woodhams. You can see Helene's work in the Arizona Daily Star. She reviews books, literary critic there at the Star. She's retired from the Pima County Public Library, where she was the literary arts librarian and coordinator of the Southwest Books of the Year. Let's try to work in a couple of more of these top 10 picks. Let's begin with you, Bruce Dingus. A book titled On Swift Horses, and I guess this is a pretty darn stellar debut novel.
Yeah, this is by Shannon Pufall. She teaches at Stanford, but this book just floored me. It came out toward the end of 2019 and missed last year's list, but I've been buttonholing everybody saying, you've got to read this. First thing that attracted to me is it's some of the most elegant prose I've read in a long time. Just every sentence is a gem. But it also appealed to me as a historian because she sets this novel in 1957, which she identifies as sort of a point in the Southwest or the West in general, where it's just poised on the brink of a huge transition. And her characters are trying to find their footing in this kind of new world. And it's the world post-World War One, post-Korean War world. And Muriel is the novel's main character. She's migrated with her husband from rural Kansas, where she's led a very sheltered and sort of traditional conservative life. And he's been lured west by the prospect of taking advantage of the GI Bill and building a permanent home in one of the suburbs that are springing up around San Diego at the time. And while he's off work, she's kind of at loose ends and is drawn to the horse racing circuit, to the track. And she revels in the excitement. She's good at it. She's a woman among men and holds her own. And she's also kind of attracted by her brother-in-law, who's also a Korean War vet, and he seems to be just aimlessly wandering, trying to find himself, going from Las Vegas casinos to the back streets of Tijuana. And Muriel finally, in examining all these things, comes to some surprising truths about herself that I won't give away. But it's Pufo's kind of exploration of this crooked trail of self-discovery set against this modern world in transition that just makes an unforgettable read for me.
And the title again, On Swift Horses, Shannon Pufall, and the publisher is Riverhead Books. Time for one more, Helene Woodhams. We have one of your picks, Reservation Restless. What's this about?
Okay, well, this is a memoir from Jim Christofik, who, I hope I'm saying his name right, he scored Southwest Books of the Year top pick a few years ago with his first memoir, Navajos Wear Nikes. And in this book, he wrote about growing up on the Navajo reservation when his mom moved them from Pittsburgh to take a nursing job in Ganado. So this is very challenging for a little white kid from the East, you know, growing up on being the odd one out on the reservation. But he works his way in, and he comes to embrace and, you know, finally really internalize the Navajo way of living. I think along the way, his mother remarries. He has a Navajo stepfather. He has half-siblings. And he finds that he moves, this is good for him, that he's always moving towards harmony in the Navajo way. And he continues the story with Reservation Restless. So the thing I love about this book is in the very beginning, he explains that the thing that made him want to write this book was the day he literally walked through a rainbow. He's out hiking in an arroyo with his dog. He sees a rainbow. One end of it ends in the hills to the north. But the other half of it, you know, the other end of it is directly in front of him. He walks back and forth through it, okay, and he marvels at this. And it's an experience in many ways. It exemplifies the way he has a foot in the Anglo world and a foot in the Navajo world. He knows science. He knows that rainbows are caused by white light and prisms of raindrops. But he also knows that in the Navajo world that they are beauty trails that the holy people use to travel and communicate with earth surface people, he calls them. They travel on rainbows. They travel because the Navajo are a restless people, and so is Christofic, and he wonders why. And what explains the desire to move on and yet to be drawn ever homeward? He is an introspective writer. He's a gifted storyteller, and he very articulately conveys the essence of the mythic reality of the Diné people and the sacred landscape of the reservation. This is an entrancing book just on a number of levels. This is important, too. The narrative is delivered in stories rather than statements because he says this is the Navajo way.
Again, the title is Reservation Restless. Sounds like an outstanding memoir, and it's published by the University of New Mexico Press. Helene, where can people see the entire list? I guess that will be available on the website for the Pima County Library.
I'm so glad you asked, because I wanted to point out that this is like a reveal. It's not out yet. The last I heard, which was yesterday, they're looking at having it up on the website by the end of this week. The print, Southwest Books of the Air has not escaped the depredations of the pandemic, which is, you know, kind of what slowed everything down. The print version, I'm not sure when that will be available, but it will be online by the end of the week.
Bruce Dingus, how many years have you been reviewing the books? It's got to be at least 20, 25 maybe?
It's been more than that. It's more like, I think I began in 86, so it's getting up there to where you don't want to count it anymore. But since you mentioned that, I wanted to mention just one thing in a bunch of sad announcements for this year. I just wanted to acknowledge that this past year, J.C. Martin, who founded Southwest Books of the Year, passed away. And so over the Christmas holidays, Peg Bowden, who's written several books that have made our list on Southwest border issues. So if there's that kind of sad commentary on this year to add to everything else.
Bruce, I'm going to really put you on the spot here. I've known you many, many years. Give me a book or two that just always pops, that is right there at the top of the list when you think about over all these years.
Oh, God. You know, it's actually before my time, and I'm going to mention this because he also passed away recently. It's J.P.S. Brown's The Horses
right.
of the Night.
Yep.
I always come back to that book. It's just amazing.
Again, the title of that Brown book?
Forests of the Night.
Yeah. He had quite a career and was very, very well known, wasn't he?
Yeah, Joe was one of a kind, and you know, he had the unfortunate title of being, you know, the Southwest's most underappreciated writer. But if you can get a hold of that book, you'll find out why he's considered so highly.
Helene Woodhams, Bruce Dingus, always a pleasure. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Hope you enjoyed our reveal here on the program of the winners, 10 winners of the Southwest Books of the Year. Have a great afternoon, everybody.